I think we're ready to get going now. That was just a test like a minute ago when I said we're going to get going. So, all right.
Recording in progress.
Well, I call to order the City Council meeting of the City of Atascadero and ask Council Member Darris to lead us in a pledge to the flag.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Thank you. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borba?
Here.
Councilmember Darris?
Here.
Councilmember Newsom?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Here.
Mayor Moreno?
Here.
All present.
Thank you. For those of you attending in person or listening to the City Council meeting tonight, we welcome you. If you would like to speak by phone during the time that is set aside for community forum or public comment on any of the items, you can do that by calling the following number, 669-900-6833. And using meeting ID 889-2347-9018. And when you call, please let us know which item it is that you would like to speak on. Once again, the number you can call tonight for community forum or public comment is 669-900-6833, meeting ID 889-2347-9018. Can I get a motion to approve the agenda?
I'll move approval of the agenda.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Borbeau, a second by Councilmember Newsom. We will waive the reading in full of all ordinances appearing on this agenda, and the titles of the ordinances will be read aloud by the city clerk at the first reading after the motion and before the council votes. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. I'm going to ask our city clerk, we had three closed sessions, one on November 14th, one on November 28th, and one on December 4th. And I'll ask our city clerk if there's any reportable action.
There was no reportable action.
Thank you very much. We're moving on to our consent calendar. The items on our consent calendar are considered to be routine and non-controversial by city staff and can be approved in one motion unless there's a member of the public wishing to pull an item or a member of the council wishing to pull an item for further discussion. So with that, I will look to my colleagues to see if there's anybody wishing to. Oh, I'm not seeing any member of the public wishing to pull an item for consent. I'm going to look onto the webinar as well. Let me get over to attendees here and see if there's anybody there that wants to pull an item. You could certainly raise your hand, and I'm not seeing any. So I'll bring it back to council and ask for a motion.
I'll move approval of the consent calendar.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Borbeau, a second by Councilmember Darris. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. And before we move on to our legislative update, we have, as you noticed in our consent calendar, two new additions to our Atascadero family, and I'm going to turn it over to our city manager to introduce these two individuals.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, members of council. I'm thrilled with the new members of our team, two critical positions, and a city attorney and a police chief. So I want to introduce your new city attorney to you first. David Fleischman is no stranger to Atascadero. His law firm, prior to where he is now, was located here for a number of years. He lived here and raised his children here. Went to a Greyhounds, their Greyhounds. One of them is out here and is still involved in the community on a number of boards. And so having a local attorney, we're very grateful the council selected a person who understands Atascadero, loves Atascadero, and has an office in San Luis Obispo, which is tremendous. Dave's been practicing law for a number of years, went to the University of California at Berkeley, and he got his law degree from the University of Arizona. As a Trojan, we have good discussions about that. But nonetheless, he has served numbers over 40 agencies in California and has a huge specialty in just general law and transactions and advising city governments, really counseling us on making good decisions early so we don't have issues later. And I think that's something I really prize about Dave. I had the privilege to work with him in Pismo Beach for 10 years. He is city attorney in Pismo Beach and is just retiring from Solvang as city attorney, has worked for the cities of Pacific Grove, Morro Bay, so a number of cities with similarities to ours. I think you'll find Dave is very approachable, I think very friendly, has a huge understanding of the law, as recognized by him chairing the Cal City's Legal Advocacy Committee for a number of years, and was recognized by his peers being elected as president of the City Attorney's Department just a few years ago. And so we have a top-notch city attorney that you've selected, and I'm just so encouraged to have a partner at the management team level. They can advise us through decisions and help us pre-plan decisions to make sure those are the very best decisions and limiting the city's liability. So Dave is also, you'll find, very incredibly interesting in his music choices, and he is actually a wildlife photographer on the side. Perhaps you'll have the joy of seeing some of his pictures sometime. They're National Geographic quality. So we have a very learned, accomplished, and very interesting city attorney. I'm pleased to introduce David Fleischman. Welcome.
If I may, Madam Mayor, thank you for that. Listening to that, my initial reaction was, who is he describing? That's wonderful for Jim to say. I am glad to be back in the community where I raised my family, where I had my law firm for many years, and I'm glad to be part of the Atascadero community again. Thank you for the opportunity to serve the city. I hope that I will be able to live up to the task that you have assigned me, and I will try to be as approachable as Jim has mentioned. I feel that I'm doing my job the best when I am kind of behind the scenes and no one sees what I'm doing, but if I'm doing my job well, then there's no need for there to be anyone calling my office. So I will do the best that I can to keep the city on the straight and narrow, and I'm happy to be here. So thanks very much.
Well, we are happy you were here too, and we had several attorneys that we interviewed, all very qualified, excellent attorneys, and I will say it was unanimous. The five of us really felt that you were the best fit, and we're looking forward to working together. And for those of you in the public, you may not know this, but we as council have two employees and only two employees that we hire as a city council, and that is the city attorney and the city manager. So we've had to do both of those this year, which is not something you do a lot of. So I think we've made two very good decisions. So welcome. And city manager, I will hand it back to you for the next one.
Yes, I'm thrilled about our next introduction of our new police chief. Chief Settles, can you come to the lectern here as you come? I want to honor Chief Settles. So Chief Settles is currently the Chief of Police of the Bear Valley Police Department. He's been there a couple years and done a tremendous job for them. Do not drive through Bear Valley. You might get assaulted or something. They're not happy that we have Chief Settles now. I'm staying off of 58 myself. That's the road that runs through there, right? 58, I think. And so Chief Settles has had 20 years in law enforcement, notably with the Glendale Police Department. And prior to that, he served our country valiantly, and perhaps I'll tell you that story sometime, with the United States Marine Corps for 8 years. And learned a lot about leadership and courage and service. But in his time in Glendale, that's a larger agency. And Glendale's really a unique city because it's a small town in a big place, and it is a big city, but it has small city standards and pockets of neighborhoods and a lot of things that would be transferable to us. He worked through the ranks in law enforcement there, through patrol, through detectives, leading detectives, leading internal affairs, which was a big deal as a lieutenant, really touching on all aspects of the police department. But I think where you really started to learn about, get a taste of leadership and being a chief, was when he served as the adjutant to the chief of police, which is kind of a chief of staff and a key person that supports the chief of police, and started interacting with the council and department heads and the captains in the department, and was also the public information officer. So getting out in the community, talking, sharing difficult news, challenging news about people's safety. And so really enjoyed that, and then ended up in patrol night patrol for the city of Glendale, really learning to manage an operation that's larger than our police department at that point in time. So learning how to manage a number of personalities with five sergeants in the field, and so really learned some great skills there. I was impressed with Chief Settles just in his demeanor. He's a very humble servant leader that just naturally connects with people. He's gracious, he's kind. As I was reading through his background, he's a unicorn. I thought, how can 50 people say the same thing about a person from neighborhoods, past jobs, past all just gracious, kind servant leader, best person I ever worked with, best person I ever worked for. And I think Chief Suttles has a real good handle on law enforcement in a town our size, having worked in Bear Valley, going from Glendale to Bear Valley. I think he got a real good handle on that. And he has a real good handle on the challenges of modern policing and making sure we're policing for all and respecting people and training up a generation of police officers that are compassionate, respectful, but yet firm and do their job and do their job well. I'm pleased that the police department, the POA, had a good time to visit and interview with Chief Suttles. He enjoys their unanimous support. He enjoys the unanimous support of each of the committees. I think we had 17 people interview him over the course of a day, of the community, of the executive team. So I'm just thrilled to have Chief Suttles come on board. I know that he'll be a chief for our department that will raise up and mentor and lead our outstanding police department to even give greater service. One of the things I liked about the chief, are you blushing yet? was he recognizes how great our police department is, and instead of changing or doing other things, how do we refine and do even better what we do well? And I thought that was really neat when he said that, and I think our officers picked up on that. So I'm thrilled to introduce our new police chief, Chief Dan Suttles. Welcome. Hi.
Thank you very much. That was incredible. Madam Mayor, City Council, thank you very much for having the confidence in me to choose me to come and take on this challenge. And thank you very much for that. And I also wanted to say that the process of hiring can be very stressful, but the professionalism of the staff was extremely welcoming. I already feel like I'm part of a team, and that's really nice to step into. But one of the things that Jim hit on was the fact that the respect that I carried for this police department coming into it. It's difficult to find a police department that has such a good reputation. And a reputation that a police department has is something that's earned. That's earned by the men and women of that department. And it's earned through a culture. And as I got to know a lot of the police officers that work there, and I got to walk through the halls of that police department, you can see why. If you walk through there, you'll see plastered on the walls everywhere what they believe in, what their guiding principles are, and their professionalism, the partnerships that they value, and the fact that they're very cognizant about their own personal growth. And that not only, it's good for them, but it's good for everybody. So I'm excited that I get to join a team that is so well-established and a team that's worked so hard for the reputation that they have. I think that my job really is just to help foster and create an environment that allows great people to do great things. So that's what I hope to be able to commit to do for this department. And then by that, then the residents of Atascadero clearly will benefit. So thank you guys, everybody, for this opportunity. And I tell you, I'm super excited to be here. So thank you.
Thank you, Chief Suttles. I know we do want to take some photos. I will say that just for the public's edification, Chief Suttles starts, I believe, January 8th, and he and Chief Allen will have some crossover, which will be nice, and you are very right. We have an incredible department and people that work there, so welcome. I think you're going to be the right leader, so thank you. And let's do some pictures.
what to do.
Okay, we are now moving on to our legislative update. You might notice that Community Forum normally would come right now. Our next presenter, Jason Gonzalez, needs to get to another meeting, and so we want to optimize the time we have with him. So we're going to go to item B, which is how we have agendized it, to our legislative update, the 2004 federal and state legislative platform. And Jason Gonzalez, if you want to go ahead and come online here. Nice to see you there, Jason.
Great to see you as well, Madam Mayor. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you just fine.
Well, thank you very much. And again, Jason Gonzalez, it's a pleasure to be before the mayor and council. I very much appreciate the opportunity. And I guess I should start with happy holidays, especially before I delve into what may be on the horizon for the state of California and the state legislature when they return in January. As noted in your staff report, our firm has had the pleasure of representing your city dating back to 2012. We are not an extension of the league. We really do specialize in our relationship is to represent your city on any and all issues that may come before the legislature, the administration, specific to the city of Atascadero. And over the past 10 plus years, we've had the privilege of sharing in a number of successes, you know, whether ranging from just general legislation, ABC licensing and enforcement, military and armory issues, the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and then my favorite was, and probably most notably, was getting the State Department of Finance to recognize your incredible City Hall as an enforceable obligation in the post-redevelopment world we started in 2012. Very briefly, just looking back, Madam Mayor, on the 2023 legislative session, Sacramento, as you probably know all too well, has no shortage of bills introduced each year. In 2023, in January of this year, 2,662, so nearly 3,000 bills were introduced. Prior to the legislature adjourning on September 14th, 1,046, so again, almost 1,100 bills were sent to Governor Newsom. The governor had 30 days to take action on the nearly 1,100 bills. He signed 890 and vetoed 156, consistent with prior years, maybe a little bit even higher, about a 15% veto rate. So as we look forward to the 2024 legislative session, we're entering into what's called the second year of a two-year session on January 3rd. And what that means is all bills from this past session as well as going forward will have to be passed by August 31st, as they call it, sine die. Otherwise, the bills will be dead. So there'll be an eight-month sprint to the finish with another 2,000 plus or minus bills on the horizon. Overarching, or the dark cloud above all of that, perhaps, is Governor Newsom will be entering his second consecutive year facing a budget deficit. The first 4 years were all surpluses. Last year began deficit year, and this upcoming session is a projected $68 billion budget deficit. The pendulum has swung, as only in California, I guess we would say, from $100 billion surplus to now what has grown to be about a $68 billion deficit. In addition, in July, we have new leadership in both houses. In July, Assemblymember Robert Rivas became the new Speaker of the Assembly. He did hold off on committee membership and leadership changes, and those changes were just announced about a week ago. And so we've seen new committee chairs, majority floor leader, and so forth in the Assembly. In the Senate, on February 5th, Senator McGuire will become the new president pro tem. And like in the Assembly, post-February, we will see a host, if not wholesale, change of leadership, committee assignments, and so forth. So there'll be new leadership in both houses, new committee chairs, and most notably the budget chairs, with having to tackle a budget deficit by June 15th. The other key issues, just high level, that will be continuing to see, particularly as it relates to the city, housing and homelessness will continue to be a priority for the new leaders. Sales tax versus use tax, and you know, online sales versus brick and mortar sales are continuing to kind of percolate or come to a boil. And I know the League of California Cities has, or Cal Cities has, their working group. Public safety will continue to be an issue. We now have a special committee to combat retail theft. I would note, prior to adjournment this past September, and actually before the July recess, there was a bill on human trafficking that failed in the Assembly Public Safety Committee. The new Speaker, Robert Rivas, did an impromptu hearing, and the members that had voted against that bill reversed their votes and passed that bill out, and it ultimately went to the governor and was signed. So I share that story as an indication of, and perhaps for the new police chief, it may be refreshing to know that the pendulum is starting to swing, at least on the political side and policy side in Sacramento, back towards law and order, and how that couples with Prop 4757 AB 109. I think it's moving in the direction of local law enforcement. In fact, I would actually argue it couldn't have got much worse in recent years. So that said, I'll conclude with, I just very much want to thank your management team, your city manager. We've worked with him over the years. Even when he had left briefly, we worked with him through the California City Management Foundation. He's a fantastic leader. Your management team has done a fantastic job on the legislative platform. It's a pleasure to work with them. It's their direction, obviously the mayor and council's direction, and the management team's guidance that enables us to be successful in Sacramento. I would also like to note the fantastic representation. Senator Laird and Assemblymember Addis are fantastic leaders and partners in Sacramento, and we look to them quite often, and with a significant amount of success. So I will stop there. Again, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity. I'm happy to answer any questions, perhaps other than the one that may ask where the $68 billion is going to come from. But with that, again, happy holidays, and appreciate the time.
Thank you, Jason. I will actually ask our city manager, are we going to ask any questions we might want of Jason, and then he'll be moving on, and then we'll be dealing with the platform while he's got. That's what I thought. All right. So any questions that council has for Mr. Gonzalez before he heads off? Councilmember Borbeau.
Yes. Thank you. I'm glad you alluded to sales tax. I was, until recently, the chair of the League's Revenue Tax Committee, and I did want us to potentially discuss putting something in our platform about supporting legislation that would recognize a sales tax on online purchases, certainly from out of state, should go straight to the jurisdiction, you know, where the purchaser is receiving the goods. I think we would certainly prefer that also for in-state online sales, but I think the League is going to be moving, hopefully moving towards a compromise. But it's something that I hope that, you know, you're certainly, I'm glad to hear you're aware of it and that the League has the working group, which I'm listening in on and participating in. And I hope that we might talk sometime and you be able to see or suggest perhaps what we might be able to do or pursue as a city, especially with our capable local representatives we have that you mentioned. So thank you.
Thank you. And just one note on that, you know, our firm worked tirelessly back in 04 during Proposition 1A to constitutionally protect the sales tax. As you can likely imagine, the big cities wanted to protect the property tax. And my only nervousness around the entire discussion, and perhaps I'm just jaded for 25 plus years of this, the sales tax is the last piece the legislature has not been able to get their hands on. And as we historically know, and painfully well, anytime the legislature gets their hands on our revenue, VLF being one example, it becomes their revenue. And so that's just a cautionary note. I agree with, you know, there's out-of-state sales. And we also have, as you likely know, Councilmember, California Department of Tax and Fee Administration doing their own kind of analysis and implementation of guidelines and some clawbacks on sales tax agreements. So it's a precarious situation, but very much appreciate your comments and guidance.
Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor. One of the questions, things, concerns that comes up as we work on the challenges of homelessness is that the Proposition 47 has effectively ultimately created an environment where people can pursue an active addiction through the supported by a combination of homelessness, petty theft, and shoplifting. And that makes it very difficult for us, even if we can get the treatment resources lined up, which is also a big need, to give people the right moments and incentives to help them move out of that that life of addiction in ways and move into something that is both more healthy and survivable for them and also more sustainable in our communities. So is there any, are you seeing any flex with the changeover in leadership of the Public Safety Committee, any receptivity to anything that would help potentially create a little bit more in the way of tools or incentives for cities without going into wholesale incarcerating people for not having enough money to have housing?
Very good question. I would say on the latter part, there is not an appetite within the legislature to go back to mass incarceration, regardless of leadership of either Public Safety Committee. We'll likely see a new chair of the Senate Public Safety Committee. That said, 4757-109 and the addiction, as you mentioned, particularly on retail theft, has risen to the top of the agenda for the governor. And also on the homelessness, you know, wraparound services and rather, it's more than just a roof over an individual's head. The wraparound services and providing programs and treatment is also a big piece. As you know, the governor took a bold step with Care Court. It's going to take quite a while, if not too long, for immediate reaction, but it's definitely a priority, and I think you'll start to see it moving towards more of a partnership with locals.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Councilmember Borbeau.
In the report here, it mentions support and pursue changes to the Surplus Land Act, you know, that currently limits local authorities' ability to dispose of property, you know, and what what it, you know, it has to be offered up. Okay, but what I was wondering, though, is does he foresee anything, any potential for change from the legislature on that, or is that kind of hardwired on, and you know, very, are they going to be very resistant to any change on that?
Councilmember, what I would note is this past year, the Senate and Assembly came together on some changes to the Surplus Land Act. Senator Caballero, the chair of Governance and Finance, and Assemblymember Ting, the one that was the author of the initial two pieces of legislation, it did move more towards local governments. The bill that was being supported, Senator Caballero's legislation, did ultimately pass and get signed. And so the legislature has shown just this session an appetite to make refinements to SLA. And I expect we'll likely see more, especially as each member, or many of the members, are starting to hear from their local jurisdictions. There's projects throughout the state being tripped up over SLA, and for what was initially couched as technical, it's become much more difficult to navigate than a technical process. So I think we'll see additional legislation on that.
All right, thank you.
Right. I'm not seeing any others. It was a pleasure to see you again, and I appreciate your time back in September when we were up in Sacramento, and glad to be continuing to work with you.
Thank you, and very much appreciate your time, Madam Mayor, and members of the council, and anytime you're in Sacramento, our office is your office. So I'm not sure there's a lot drawing you to Sacramento these days, but when you're in town, we look forward to meeting with you. And happy holidays again.
Happy holidays. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're going to bring this back to our city manager, I believe. Are you going to, Mr. Lewis, do the presentation on this? Okay, fantastic.
Thank you. And I do want to first recognize Laura Christensen for, in her role as deputy city manager, there's a lot of new things coming towards her. And she'll be managing our legislative advocacy program and the contract with Gonzalez, and really making sure we're getting our voice heard and follow through. So I appreciate Ms. Christensen's work. She was a large part of putting this together, and I really appreciate that she's stepping up in so many other areas in that role. So thank you, Laura, for you're doing great work here. I think as a result of having some staff effort focused on this, I think the council's going to see us more vocal, recommending more positions. We certainly are going to take Mr. Gonzalez's offer to be in Sacramento, be meeting with your representatives, be meeting with senior administration officials to make sure our voice is heard and our needs are getting met. And as I said, we are fortunate to have two good local elected officials that look out for us. We have a good relationship with them. But a person like Jason can just get you in some offices sometimes you can't call 1-800 to get into, you know. So really appreciate their effort. So something's before you is new tonight, and that's what I think I wanted to bring to you, a legislative platform. In my experience in city management, this is a best practice, and I want to share with the council why. First and foremost, it's a transparent document that we can convey to our residents what we are fighting for at the state and local level, what you stand for as the city council on your policy statements. And so it's a really important document for that. It also becomes a tool for Jason, our lobbyist, to have in his pocket as he's having conversations. There may be conversations he's having with legislators on behalf of somebody else, and they might ask about what does Atascadero think, or how many cities agree with you on that. And having a statement of position, he can affirmatively say, five cities, or all of my cities. And so these are tools for your advocate to be a better advocate for you. I think it also gives a chance for each of you as council members to weigh in on your legislative platform and your position. So that's also very important, as opposed to the mayor and I being in Sacramento saying what we believe the city thinks. There is a clear statement of position that you all had input on that makes the statement stronger. So when we're advocating on behalf of the community, it's very clear what you believe. This also has had a lot of input from your staff, so we're able to convey to the council things we're monitoring and keeping an eye on that we have concerns for that we believe are in the best interest of the community. And finally, it allows us to act sometimes quicker than we may need to be able to through the typical legislative process. And so, as Jason said, there's a number of bills this year that will be introduced, that there's a number of them sitting. So you're going to have 3,000 to 4,000 bills perhaps next year. And a lot of those get pushed to the end, and it starts getting quick. And so to have a statement of position that allows us to act is a really purposeful thing that we can weigh in. So sometimes you don't have time to agendize a letter or get back to things. So that's why I suggested this to you. Now, the format and the discussion I really encourage the council to have is, one, do you think this is necessary? I'm recommending it. I think it's a very good tool for cities. It's also very helpful for the staff. But first of all, is this something the council's interested in? There's levels of detail, right? The staff tried to submit something. It's the first shot at this. We tried to submit something that we thought covered a lot. We didn't put controversial positions in here. We didn't put, most of these are consistent with how the city has acted in the past. We looked at that, consistent with League of Cities positions. So most of these things are, I would say, more vanilla. They're not neutral. There's definitely some statements here that say what we support or oppose. If the council wanted to have further discussion on some of these items, that would be helpful. The council may want to adopt something a little less detailed than this, a little lighter than this, that maybe has just the policy statements. I leave that to you in discussion. We're also happy to chew on this more if the council wishes to do that and discuss it at a later date. But I do think it's an important document for us to have and a good tool. And so, Mayor, I'll turn it back to you. I can answer questions or the council can get right to it.
Thank you. I like dividing it sort of into those three pieces. And so number one would be, and I think we can all agree because we've been doing this job for a while and we understand the importance of being able to advocate on behalf of the city and our residents. And we've been doing that for a long time, and this is what you're, you know, in your experience and what you're bringing to us is a tool that we can use, and we've certainly seen other cities, the county, use such a tool. So if we start at that high level, are there questions or anything about just the purpose of having the legislative agenda, or are we kind of on board with this, with the general concept of doing something? Councilmember Newsom.
I guess my biggest question is, as council changes up every few years, is this something that can be reevaluated at strategic planning? I see our priority policy areas, and, you know, obviously homelessness is not going to go away next election, but bringing this back on a regular basis for the acting council to review it to make sure that we're following through with what we've done strategically as well as our focus areas.
That's a great question, Councilmember. So as a matter of practice, at a bare minimum, you would see it every year this time of year. When your lobbyist is giving you an update, you'd have a chance to review it and make corrections based on the forecast of the upcoming legislative year or positions you wish you may have had or positions that may not be necessary anymore based on a victory you'd modified. So at a minimum, you would see this every year. It's interesting, it says reaffirmed by the council. I typed that, but you would be affirming it today and then reaffirming it every year. I think it's always healthy if the council wanted to have a conversation about this during your strategic planning. If there are major changes to the city's goals or focus, it would be healthy to take a look at this. And that's a good, less formal time to actually have substantive discussions about this. So those are at least two times I'd recommend. I think more than that, you probably wouldn't need to. But this is certainly a living document, and it is anticipated. It changes slightly from year to year.
Okay. Thank you.
Confirm from a process perspective that the intent is to have a more specific thing, not only that our lobbyists can use on our behalf, but also that if the city were needing to take a more formal position on specific legislation, that the city manager could communicate with the lobbyists or city staff could do so on behalf of the council on the basis of the positions that we commit to in this document.
That's correct.
Okay. And that you would then communicate back with us that that communication had occurred.
Yes, and that's a good point, Mayor Pro Tem. In your norms, if you did adopt something like this and we were able to send letters upon request, I would always confirm that with the mayor, and then every council member gets a copy of the correspondence that was sent. So you're kept in the loop. That is one of your norms.
Thank you.
All right, so it sounds like we're generally in agreement that something of this type is useful and we're on board with it. So I want to go to the next level now and ask, when we look at the policy priority areas, so affordable housing and homelessness being one, infrastructure funding being the other, and third is maintaining local control. Those and then the eight policy statements, so we have community development, employee relations, government administrative in government administration and budget finance, information technology and cybersecurity, homelessness, housing and homelessness, parks and recreation, and police department, criminal justice reform, and then finally public works and transportation. So if you, when you look at those policy statements in those key areas, are there any questions, thoughts, concerns? Do we generally look and say, you know, hey, those statements reflect, you know, the priorities and things that we've talked about over particularly this last year and that we've all been working towards, or any questions, concerns, Councilmember Newsom?
I don't really have any questions and concerns. I do like the idea of having a roadmap laid out so that others understand where our focus is. I think that this is very summarized, brief, and to the point. So I like having this written out. I think as the first go around throughout the year of implementing it and reviewing it every year, I think we are able to fine-tune it. So I have no issues with its layout.
I think that the general scope of it and the level of depth here is valuable. I think it is very useful for us to go beyond the broader policy statements into the specific items.
And we'll get to those because, in just a minute,
right, right. But I want to encourage us not to stop at the high level, but to get the specificity so that we can be clear about what the positions are.
Okay.
Yeah, I like the way it's laid out, and like as it was said, it's more of a living document, so as time goes, if we need to massage it, change certain things, or if as things change, this document will reflect our direction. But I like the way it's laid out.
I recall from our conversations, Mr. Lewis, that these are not in any particular priority list, so in that sense that's good. My take on it, though, is a little different in the sense that it's almost too busy. It's almost too many things, almost too much.
If we stay, though, and I know we've kind of each touched on that, but yeah. I'm going to get to that in just one moment. But I want to know the 8 policy areas and the 3 priorities. Are you good with those?
I'm okay with those themselves.
Okay, so then let's move now to the level of detail, and if you want to say something, and then we'll start going into that.
Okay, so I want to switch gears.
Yeah,
I mean, for me, actually, there's almost too much. I understand the desire for some degree of specificity. There's almost too much, and so much of it revolves around that third priority area, which is maintaining local control. So many of these specific positions are about maintaining local control, not having the state take over, not having the state dictate to us in essentially all 8 of these policy areas, or not dictating more than is absolutely necessary. And so, I don't know, I just feel like it's a bit too much, if you will. And I would ask, you know, you mentioned something about League of Cities positions or Cal Cities positions. I don't see anything in there where we would be directly contrary to them, but I think it would be something for our own edification if we were taking a position contrary to them, which we certainly could do, that it would be worthy of note so we'd know that we're in a particular instance, not on the same sheet of music as Cal Cities.
That's actually good direction for me to note for the future. I appreciate you stating that.
Yeah.
So you're a little bit in the too much detail. Mayor Pro Tem, did you have?
Yeah, I think the level of detail is useful. Yeah, you know, is it a little bit long? Yeah, it's probably a little long. But I think making sure that the staff has the opportunity to bring us this level of clarity about the things that are on their mind in terms of what the state is doing and the feds are doing that affect us is fine. And I think it is useful to have this level of clarity, even if it's, you know, there'll be some things that don't come up, and you know, so I think it's better to be a little more detailed than a little less detailed in this particular work. And I do have specific suggestions as we get to that.
Okay. So other thoughts, Councilmember Newsom, you kind of said you were good with the other. I didn't know if you were including everything in that or just.
I think it's hard to go through each bullet point and just kind of cross out what we don't think applies. I think as we go through it, to first go around with it, I think being in the functionality and referring to this as we go along is going to be a starting point. I mean, our mission statement didn't start out short.
Council Member Darris, any thoughts?
Well, I'm just, yeah, concur with what's been said. I mean, there is an awful lot of detail here, but I think it has the potential to grow and be even more detailed as time goes. But it's good. I think it's a great resource now to refer to as things come up. We can certainly go use this as a tool. I think it's a great, it's well thought out, and I think it's good attention to detail. I think detail's good. I'm a detail guy, obviously, for what I do. So I think this is good for that.
Okay. So what it's sounding like is we're all good with having some details. Some of us maybe a little more, a little less, and it could be tonight that we kind of look at, we get, you know, obviously input from the public, and we have a conversation about, you know, do we want to go with this? Maybe we make a few changes. Do we want to go with it as is and then maybe make changes, you know, early in the year when we get together for our planning? You know, because we certainly, there's probably, I don't know, 150 of them here. We don't want to go wordsmithing all the bullets tonight. That's not what we're going to do. But yet, you know, some of us have some thoughts about maybe some of these that shouldn't be in there or some things that should be. And so we can kind of go through that conversation. But if we're getting to a point where, say, you know, Councilmember Bourbeau or anyone says, you know, hey, we're fiddling with this too much. Let's have something simple and come back, you know, in the spring when we all get together for sort of that mid-cycle, whatever we call it, planning that we do on our off-year, off-budget year, then we could do that.
Well, I have a comment on that, but I think I'll hold it till after we see if there's any public comment.
Sure. All right. So let's go with any ideas or input on these. I have a few myself, but I think Mayor Pro Tem Funk, you had some input or questions to this. Yeah.
Yes. So starting on page 82, as we look at the second bullet there, seek additional direct funding resources, including grants for a variety of things. I would like to add child care to that list. I think strategically that's a key issue for our community, for business development, and for quality of life, and is consistent with our goals.
I think it adds right in there with that after-school, preschool program, so, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But preschool often...
No, I mean, I think it fits in there with
yes,
that, so
it,
yes.
Right, yeah. It fits in there with that, yeah. And the added specificity is helpful. In the federal objectives under that same section, I would encourage our lobbyists to seek medical reimbursement rates that are consistent with the housing costs and cost of doing business in this area, in Atascadero and in Slo County, as opposed to the rural rates that Medicare currently assigns us. This comes up often in conversations within our community because people have a hard time getting into to see a doctor, and that our facilities and our medical practices can't attract the doctors that our city needs and our population needs because we're classified as a rural area, and so the pay is too low to cover the cost of the practice. It's not going to be an easy one to solve. It is something that I've talked about with Congressman Panetta, and it is, but it's something we should put on our list of things to watch for and work on. And on page 84, on the line item that references monitoring potential legislation that makes mandatory changes to district election policy and procedures, I'm wondering if we might, as a council, want somewhat stronger language there, such as adding and support legislation that would enable cities to avoid being compelled to adopt district elections in situations where there was no, where district elections did not clearly advance the goals of the CVRA. This is something that we see, the California Voting Rights Act is currently being used to, as a sort of,
as a moneymaker.
Yes, a moneymaker for lawyers. It's
let's
like
just
a,
say it.
A lawyer self, that yeah, Lawyer Payment Act minimum. And to force cities into district elections in ways that don't necessarily make sense for their geography or their community, because there's no way to construct or districts that create a better opportunity. And in many cases, in smaller communities, dividing it up into district elections can actually make it harder for minority groups to have a voice. So it defeats the purpose of the Voting Rights Act to make sure that everyone in the community has a fair and equal chance to elect people that congruent with their policies and community.
And so, the city manager, there could be some stronger language, and maybe not. I don't know if it would be that much specificity, but because you could also think of supporting legislation that would say, you know, not in cities less than 100,000, or there could be any number of things, mm-hmm. but something that does make that stronger. And whether that gets done tonight or we say, hey, in the spring, let's make sure we're looking at that, but that you know that would be something.
You just let us know what you'd like.
Yeah.
I think this is an example, though, of one where staff was, because this is truly a policy point, staff put monitor. What monitor means, by the way, monitor means that if we see something that may be of interest, we bring it to you, as opposed to kicking out a letter. You may wish to simply, for now, say oppose legislation that further pushes the, you know, that would be a word change you could do.
Right. So that was to seek ways to make it better. I just have a couple more if we want to go as we're looking at things. I would, on page 85, in the first section of housing and homelessness, and the first bullet where it talks about developing, seek and support legislation, yada yada. To promote and stimulate housing development, I would modify that to be specific to affordable or lower cost housing. Where we have no problem in our community and in any community in this county meeting the state's regional housing needs assessment requirements for market rate housing, and there are people lined up in the Bay Area and LA to scoop up any bigger homes that get built here. But getting homes that our police force and our firefighters and nurses and service workers can afford is a challenge. So that's where I think we should focus our energy. On the following page, 86, in the federal objectives in this area, in there a list of various things are included. I would like to add to that project-based vouchers, because this is the financing tool that enables additional units to get built, because the subsidy needed to keep somebody with low income in that unit over time is guaranteed for a period of many years in that project. That kind of voucher was key to our getting the Project Home Key in Paso Robles, which took half of the Motel 6 and converted it to permanent supportive housing, in addition to the shelter side of the business. So that's just, it's a really useful tool. It is something that our Congressman Panetta is familiar with and supports, and we should push for that. And then I think this is my last one, so hang in there. On page 87, in the federal objectives, in which section do we? I think we moved into a different section. Yeah, to the Parks and Rec section. I would simply add, you know, in addition to seeking and supporting money for the zoo, to seek and support money for the printery, to accommodate seniors and performing arts and other community services.
I think that would be wrapped up in community development. If you look there, a lot of those points would really cover printery specifically.
Right. It could be in either place, just someplace in there, because I think we're going to need federal money for that, and it would be very helpful to have our legislator, our lobbyist, looking for where those opportunities are, both, it may be useful to get that as an appropriation item or to get it, because it doesn't quite fit into just a historic building or just an arts resource or just this. There are several different pigeonholes. It doesn't fit in because it's a multi-purpose use, and that makes it a more complicated funding opportunity and therefore a good thing for our lobbyists to work on. And that's my list of recommendations. Thank you.
Councilmember Newsom.
Thank you. I was just going to add to Mayor Pro Tem's comment. Perhaps we can get the attorney's perspective on the CVRA. I think you have got some key insights that could help us in that bullet point.
Well, having been on the bad side of a redistricting fight, I think it is something that the legislature really needs to be made aware of, that it is a bounty hunter type of program for a number of small law firms that have made literally millions of dollars on this and imposed redistricting on entities and local agencies where it just makes no sense at all. Mr. Lewis mentioned before, I recently retired from Solvang, and if you think of the size of Solvang, it's about 3 square miles, population about 5,800. It's in districts now. It makes zero sense from a districting standpoint. The demographics were difficult to figure out in that situation, let alone how to draw the lines, and there was a lot of community engagement in it. It's obviously an experiment, the results of which have yet to be seen or understood, but it is a difficult situation for all public agencies in California. And it's not just limited to cities. They're going after school districts now. They're going after community services districts. So it's something that the legislature really needs to be more aware of if it's not.
Sorry. I think some of the challenges is as we look at defining these, we focus on excentralism, but then we also look at the cost basis. A lot of these actions, such as that, is very, very cost prohibitive, as well as challenging to implement. So I think as we are looking at some of these bullet points, our focus is on, you know, is it essential? What is our trade out on the cost? And what is feasible for our community and our staff?
And so it could be that our city attorney helps us to formulate a bullet that could go in there, talking about advocating on behalf of the city as it relates to CVRA.
Yeah, are you looking for language tonight or to help put it together at some point?
We can have it done another time. I don't expect that something's going to pop up right away.
Sure.
I think it can come later. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Councilmember Borbo.
Thank you. Just a couple of observations. One, Mayor Pro Tem Funk made note of, I think on page 81, it would be nice to include, or page 82, childcare under one of the bullets. And then I noted in looking back on page 87, we say advocate for state and federal funding opportunities to increase access to childcare for the community. And to me, this is just an example of how when the document gets too big, you start to have kind of redundancies in multiple areas, because I mean her comment was very perfectly logical and made perfect sense in the context of where she put it, you know, but we're kind of already addressing it in another place, and so it goes to my comments about it kind of being about the overall document perhaps being too big and too lengthy. And in that regard, as we talked about monitoring the legislation in regarding CVRA, right above it is the very item that I was speaking of with Mr. Gonzalez, and there it was right under my nose. and so, again, going to the concept that perhaps, you know, when a document gets long, it kind of loses clarity. And so that would be my comment, although I'm kind of jumping ahead, but I would agree with, I think, what the mayor was implying, which is we could adopt this tonight, and then in February when we have our get-together, would be a good opportunity to perhaps talk and refine, add, detract, you know, add or delete items. So thank you.
Okay. One that I would like to think about adding, and again, this can be later, and two that I thought of. You know, I'd like some greater clarity, otherwise possibly even removing them. But on page 85, under state, and this is housing and homelessness, the fourth bullet, support owner occupancy through homeowner housing and homebuyer assistance programs that foster long-term neighborhood investment and stabilization. And that, for me, like the city advocating on that behalf, we had a situation, you know, not long ago where using affordable housing funds for, you know, supporting an individual to buy a home didn't turn out well. Didn't turn out well for that individual. Didn't turn out well for the city. So it doesn't turn out well for for our citizens. And it's not particularly, you know, how does this relate to the city seeking assistance programs that foster that? Because that I don't know what we would be doing for, like, to me, I would want to take that out. That is, yes, I agree, home ownership is a wonderful thing, but when you can't afford it, home ownership is not a blessing. It is a curse. And I think sometimes we're pushing people into home ownership and it doesn't turn out well. Now you have some great programs like People's Self-Help Housing where people are put in that sweat equity and they're building their homes, and there's some wonderful examples of how that can work. But I just don't know where that piece fits in. And I don't want to, we can keep it in there tonight, but that's something that in February, March, whenever we talk, I'd be interested in maybe removing that. And then the 1-2 down from that, pursue additional funding sources, including grants to pursue workforce and affordable housing. Again, we're just pursuing more money to put money towards something that makes it more expensive, and it's not affordable housing, it is it is subsidized housing. And I get concerned sometimes when agencies and government agencies all the time do this. We're pursuing grants without considering, does this meet the criteria of where we really want to be focusing our efforts? Sometimes we just go get grants for grant's sake, and, oh, good, we got money, let's go do this work. And I want to make sure, you know, so I have some issues with those. But where I would actually like to add, and again, we can do this at another time, but it would be in the, I had written down the section and now I forget. I think it's the government administration and finance budget section potentially, or no, the employee section, employee relations, where we would oppose any attempts by PERS to further dilute their earnings by making poor decisions at the legislative level. Let's just say that. So that's something I would like to potentially see in there at some point. That considered, my sense is, well, actually, I think Councilmember Bourbeau, you said you wanted to say something. Well, we will hear from the public. Is there anything else you wanted to say? Okay. So let's go ahead and jump to the public and see what public input we might have on this item. So, is there anyone here in the public that would like to speak to this? Please come forward. Welcome. I think you're not on there.
Haven't touched it. There we go. Good evening, Council. Jeff Oslin, community member. I think a couple things. When it comes to the housing element that you just mentioned, Mayor, what if that was redirected to some down payment assistance for housing? Because that is something that some communities do offer, and that doesn't take away from affordable housing, and it doesn't push people into home ownership, just something to consider. That would be my one and only thought on this. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else here in chambers wishing to speak? I'm not seeing any. Let me go to the Zoom. Okay, we've got, we do have a participant in our Zoom room. If you would like to speak on this item, please go to the bottom and there is the raise hand icon and feel free to share with us anything that you might like to. Luke, I don't show anyone on the phone, is that correct? All right. I'm not seeing anyone else wishing to speak. No? All right. I will go ahead and close public comment and bring this back to council. And Councilmember Bourbeau.
As I mentioned, I'm okay with if we do this tonight, but I would like us, perhaps as a homework assignment for the five of us, to come back and when we have our discussions in February with the thing the things we would like to see deleted or added, or combined or what have you. I'm willing to adopt it tonight, although I'm also willing to defer it if my colleagues are willing to do that as well. But I do think in February, I think is the date, February 4th or whatever, that we should discuss it.
Are you speaking to when we'll have our kind of our mid-year check-in on goals?
Yes.
That'll probably be mid to late March.
Okay.
But that's yes, fine. That's the, and you, I've been keeping track of your comments. We can certainly adopt it as is until then, and have you can each give me your comments at a later date. You did, though, between the three of you have probably 7 things you touched on. I mean, that doesn't seem overwhelming if you wanted to try and do something, but if you don't, I can certainly try and whip things up for you, but we can come back to in March, whatever the council chooses.
I would prefer that we not try to hammer out, make that sausage, you know, right here, right now, tonight. But of course, that's up to
okay.
all of you.
No, I would agree. I think we having a little bit more time to really digest this and go through and then select things that maybe should be either completely eliminated or just modified slightly. But having some time to do that rather than try to do it tonight, I think would be a good idea.
Okay. And the two of you, are you good away? Either way?
Yeah, I think it's useful for staff to have this as guidance to work from in the interim until we come to adopting a more complete statement. And I think we could go ahead and make that motion tonight and use this as a working document.
Would you like to do that?
I would be happy to adopt this as a working document. And with the recommendation that we consider that the additions that we've discussed tonight be considered at our next discussion of this and adopt this as a legislative platform.
Okay.
If that's a motion, I'll second.
All right. Was that sufficient for your city clerk? All right. So we have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Funk and a second by Councilmember Darris. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Councilmember Borbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
All right, thank you. We're going to move on to updates from our city manager, Mr. Lewis.
Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor, members of council. I have several. There's a lot going on. So our first slide we can show you here. It's an amazing time of year. We have been spreading holiday cheer all over the place, from Light Up Downtown to the Special Olympics versus the Police Department basketball tournament. As I told you, my money was on Special Olympics, and they won. And Walk Around the Lake, Winter Wonderland, on and on. So just a lot of activities. There's some fun pictures of how we've started with the cheer. Light Up the Downtown, you'll see on our next slide, was a success. And part of that was the Chamber's Sip and Shop that brought in nearly 600 tickets sold, the highest number for that portion of the event yet. So this is starting to pick up some neat speed, and that was terrific. And then we had an incredibly attended Walk Around the Lake. I have joked with people that getting around parts of the lake was like the 405 freeway. You had to put your blinker on to try and get around people. It was crazy. And so, yeah, and the council was there handing out cookies and cider. I think you had a line the whole night. We pretty much ran out of everything. Thank you for all of you for volunteering and being out in the cold to enjoy our community. But really, people had a great time. And then we went into Winter Wonderland here, you'll see. Yes, those are some beautiful pictures of thousands and thousands of people. 20th annual Winter Wonderland, 70 tons of snow, and it was a privilege. The Kiwanis Club built the sled ramp again. If I don't say the Kiwanis Club again, I'll get fined on Thursday. Rotary, though, did also contribute dollars to support the high school students who helped operate the sled. So I'm very grateful to our two service clubs for their efforts in this. And if it wasn't enough to have Winter Wonderland, let's just sparkle in a Grammy Award-winning artist, Neil Young and Daryl Hannah, signing albums on Traffic Way. That just goes to show the talent we're bringing into town. And he's very fond of Atascadero, and so is Daryl Hannah. So that was kind of fun to have them there. And I saw several employees sneaking out on their break to get signed albums, so that was pretty cool. Lots of things happening, but this is the fun. This is quality of life. This is part of your mission statement, and we're glad to be delivering on that. While we're having fun and spreading cheer, we're also improving circulation. So thank you, Council, for your leadership in getting bridges built and coming out into the neighborhoods. We accomplished 3 major ribbon cuttings, 2 bridges, Santa Lucia Bridge and Via Bridge. So there's the community on 2 new bridges. This enhances safety significantly. And especially the Via Bridge will provide an excellent alternative getting downtown on the east side of the community from 41 the Traffic Way. So these are just incredible projects. And then improving accessibility of Lake Park and Pier, which is so important, and also having a pier where you can actually, and as I shared, the view actually is pretty good out there. You get out there, the temperature drops a little bit. You know, you might be able to catch a different kind of fish. But some great ribbon cuttings. Thank you, Council, for your leadership and involvement. Road work continues, too, so we're not done yet. This is the downtown pavement project now through December 22nd. You can see what's going on. We're working on curb ramps on Lewis Avenue and Traffic Way. And then not associated with the downtown paving project, the gas company is also doing work in the neighboring alley between the Carlton and the parking lot in Palma. So some intermittent no parking there. But that's important. So what are we doing in the paving project? Next week, paving striping will begin on Entrada on Monday. So we've tried to schedule this on a low day of the week. We recognize it's the season. This will just be intermittent, no parking. It's going to slide right along. So it'll be kind of a leapfrog down the street, and it'll be done in just a couple hours. So this is going to be really fast. I anticipate we're picking up a few spots, right, where we're striping? No, don't commit, huh? So we're picking up 12 new parking spots on Entrada the way we were striping. I appreciate staff being creative and looking at that, and that'll be great. So getting that done. On the 19th, West Mall will have demolition and then paving between the school district offices and Lewis Avenue. This will be closed to through traffic and parking during heavy construction from December 21st through January 5th. The sidewalk will be open, but school's out. So we're trying to take advantage of that. So you can see we're really trying to get this done. It's moving along quickly and trying, again, to take advantage of navigating holiday traffic, trying to do Monday, Tuesday work, trying to take advantage of the school. And we've really been communicating this well. We have banners throughout downtown, online, on our front homepage. So we've really tried to make sure people know what's coming. While we're paving, we also have broadband utility work going on. So you can see the next slide. Broadband work this week will continue on Lewis Avenue near Traffic Way and Traffic Way from Palma to Tinnitus. Sidewalk and road access will be maintained. Parking will have a few temporary impacts. And then next week, it'll continue on Lewis Avenue and Traffic Way, that broadband work. And so this is investment in our future, hyper-fast internet. We really appreciate people's cooperation. I know this work is starting to feel a bit long. People have been really good, honestly, as we walk around and talk with people. I think they appreciate the communication. They appreciate the investment. And I think they see what you're doing for the community. So I appreciate that. www.atascadero.org/downtownpaving. Is how you can find out more on updates. Last week, this is kind of a fun slide. I thought you'd want to see what Rochelle's doing. Look how good she looks in retirement. So Rochelle just continues to serve the city. We had a four-hour strategic planning session on Charles Paddock Zoo. So we're kicking off the process for accreditation. I appreciate the zoo director, Terry Banish, as the director of Recreation and Community Services, is leading the efforts of the accreditation with the zoo director and of the efforts to form a really strong partnership with our friends of the Charles Paddock Zoo. So, Terry, thank you for your leadership in that. She actively participated here. Rochelle and I are just sharing a laugh. I was joking, it's kind of unique to see two city managers in the council chamber both smiling at each other, past and present. So that's I really, really respect Ms.
That's
Rickard.
That's why I took that picture.
Yeah, and her service. So that's just showing us trying to figure out how to raise a bunch of money for the zoo. So that was great. Next slide, I'm almost done. General plan. So what are we doing in the general plan and how are we coming along? The bottom right is kind of neat. So all of this information, I think it's important for the community here. We've been inputting. We've been surveying. We've been showing up at Charette's. The council had a terrific three-hour session looking at 11 opportunity zones and gave us your input. That all translates then first and foremost into a land use diagram, right? How do we then, parcel by parcel, create a land use diagram that reflects the policies of the council that also honor what the community wants to see for our future? And so staff was going through a land use diagram there with our consultant. You can see looking at certain areas being zoned to mid housing, higher density housing, flex commercial, commercial recreation, resemble the priorities that you gave us. And so we're going through neighborhood by neighborhood, parcel by parcel, working on that. When we have that, we'll look forward to sharing that with you sometime in the early spring. But just a terrific bit of work was going on, and my hat's off to the Community Development Department to come up with this preferred land use alternative that we can share with you coming into the spring. So that's great. Another neat thing about the general plan is you can see we're engaging high school students, and so that's pretty cool. On December 8th, the senior political science students for Ms. Grant's class presented their recommendations to several of you council members. Thank you. That was a really cool thing for the council to do. Talking with the students, they collaborated with the city on a project, looking at these over five Friday classes, concluding on the 8th. They had small groups that chose their interests, researching challenges, solutions, speaking with experts. Topics included land use, open space, economics, jobs, housing, homelessness, circulation, safety. And we heard from students that they really want to attract chicken restaurants and better entertainment to our towns. I'm glad the students are engaging. I'm working on a chicken restaurant right now, so they'll be happy to hear that. The students brought their creativity through their presentations. And again, I really appreciate the council engaging. This is so important for young people to see you and hear from you. My final slide, almost final, has to do with storm preparation. So the storm season is upon us. We have rain coming this weekend, rain next week. I want to make sure that people really understand it's important and imperative for you to protect your property. The city is protecting public property and public rights of way, making sure our bridges are passable, making sure our emergency vehicles can get to you, God forbid you need help. You need to protect your property. So clean your roof gutters, make sure the operation is good on downspouts, make sure your grading yard and landscaping slope away from the house to provide soft drainage, check your culverts and drain pipes under driveways or elsewhere on your property. These are things that the homeowners need to do. Removing debris from ditches and waterways so you have unimpeded water flow. Trimming trees that are low hanging or scraping against roofs or impeding vehicle passage. These are really important. We provide a list of all of these things and resources. You can see it there on our website, atascadero.org/emergency-preparedness. There's a lot of useful information, so please protect your home. Take it upon yourself to do that. We will be sending a notice to all properties adjacent to creeks with this information very shortly that reminds people what their obligations are as homeowners to protect themselves. And then switching gears, we have a little more holiday fun. We're not done yet. With December 25th approaching and Santa coming soon, we have two more events this weekend, December 16th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's Christmas at the zoo with holiday magic. So the zookeepers are stepping in as Santa's elves every 15 minutes. All of our animals, by the way, are on the nice list. I'm pleased to report we had no naughty animals. So everyone is getting a present this year. Every 15 minutes, beginning at 10:15 till 1 p.m., our animals will get presents for their enrichment. And this is just a fun thing to see. The zoo has all kinds of cool decorations. So come on out and support our zoo. And finally, our police department and its efforts to engage and learn and listen, which I really appreciate, is having coffee with a cop December 21st at Starbucks in the Vons Shopping Center. So I know we're a three Starbucks town. This is Starbucks in the Vons Shopping Center. Come join our police officers for a complimentary cup of coffee. Ask questions, get to know your police officers, and see the heart and compassion of these fine, fine people that serve us every day. So with that, I wish you all, the community, on behalf of the staff, a Merry Christmas, a safe and happy holiday. It's a privilege to serve a community we love. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Councilmember Newsom.
It's not a question. It's a bunch of comments. So we're going to start with you first, City Manager. Where's your picture of you rolling down the slide on Winter Wonderland? I think you went sideways.
City Manager has had enough unnecessary promotion, but I may have gone down that sled a few times with my son, and the video that I won was not posted. The video where I didn't win was posted, Councilmember Newsom.
All right. The second thing is I want to tell Terry thank you for capturing Council's greatest moments. I know you get up before sunup, and you stay up with us till sundown, so I'm not sure when you sleep, but thank you for one, taking the pictures and helping us embrace those moments. Two, thank you for getting us fined, because Jim Lewis is paying my fines this week, because we're on the paper again. and then I want to shout out to our Atascadero High School students who were brave enough to debate a council member on this dais about some of our choices on plans on the El Camino corridor. And we're going to call his teacher, because he was granted extra credit if he showed up to public comment tonight. So he's got till the end of this meeting to present himself to debate with Charles Burbo. Anyways, great opportunity to participate with those students. I think I learned more from them than they learned from us. So without, you know, the greatness of the city manager and everybody else on this dais, you make our life more enjoyable, and you've allowed us to celebrate in December. So thank you.
Awesome.
I wanted to thank Public Works again. You know, you outlined in the city manager report just some of the many things happening, and we have a small Public Works staff, and just the amount of things they're accomplishing and improving the physical state of the city. I think the public, you know, should be aware of that and be very thankful of that. With that, though, I do have a follow-up question, which is I know you've been asked, and if I don't ask it, probably Mr. Roslin will, and that is it's about Del Rio. I understand we've run into some delays with Caltrans in terms of our ability to fix some of those horrible potholes, you know, and horrible uneven pavement there. But I know you're working on it, but because somebody's going to ask about it, and I'm asked about it by members of the public, I'm wondering if you could clarify a little bit that, you know, the difficulty we're running into of getting the go-ahead to do that.
Sure, I'd be happy to, Councilmember Perbo. We actually have a plan to repair that intersection on the west side of the bridge, and you know, as a repair. And in a couple years, we're hoping to realign Ramona and do some improvements up on that intersection as well, or interchange. Mr. Pigeon, Deputy Public Works Director, has been charged with that. He has vast experience. He was a paving superintendent prior to coming to the city. And we actually generaled that. We got some quotes. It was like $150,000. He said we can do it cheaper. He had six contractors that were generaled. We're generaling the project. And had things ready to go, scheduled. And the city does have a blanket encroachment permit with Caltrans. But when we submitted this work to Caltrans, they wanted this to be a standard encroachment permit process, which would take anywhere from 48 weeks to get that permit. So we're, you know, reevaluating what we can do there in a more timely fashion. So I'm working on that with Matt, and we're hoping to get something done soon. I can assure the public and Mr. Roslin that we are working very actively, and your city manager is really on my case to get this done. I'm trying very, very hard. So baptism by fire, I guess, maybe. But no, we are working very hard at this, and it is a high priority. City crews have gone out there. They smoothed it out. I'm not sure if the public has noticed it much. It's very difficult to really make that any better without actually getting in there and doing a little more substantial work. But I hate to give you any time frames, so I'm hoping we can surprise the public, and we have some improvements there one day.
It's frustrating because this is one of those projects that every time you think you have the solution and something happens, whether a permit requirement or a different noticing or a contractor, or rain pops up, and so... yeah, we talk about it every week. I told Mr. DeBar, this has got to be like the top priority in the city. Let's get this done. So now we're trying to figure out with some of these confines that we've come across and challenges, what can we do that just gets it done in a way that will hold up through the storms? We recognize that the rain coming, that's what we're most concerned about. So I'm with you. I'm reticent to give a date because we keep missing it, and we can appreciate that that's frustrating to the public. I'm sorry for that. We are trying to figure this out.
And as I said, I think you get so much done that it kind of raises the bar and expectations of, you know, your ability to get everything done. And we know you're trying to get it done, and we appreciate your efforts to do it. I just wanted to give you an opportunity to, you know, explain to the public why it hasn't happened yet. So thank you.
Thank you. And I wanted to also thank our Director Banish. I like that. I haven't said that yet. Director Banish. As well as our city manager and everybody involved in that Zoom meeting. That's a big ask for people to take off, you know, essentially half a workday and come to talk about our zoo and how do we facilitate the reaccreditation process. And it was really nice to see not just former and current city manager working together, but we had, you know, board members that have been around for a while and newer board members and people really starting to mesh together and bringing that energy and ideas. So I'm excited about what's coming, and thank you so much, and thank you to Mr. City Manager. And with that, we will move on to community forum. This is a portion of the meeting that is reserved for persons wishing to address the public on, wishing to address the council on something that is not on the agenda this evening, but over which we have jurisdiction. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes, and we set aside a total of up to 30 minutes for community forum. We ask that you state your name for the record, and we do have a timer going just for your edification. So with that, welcome for speaker.
Good evening once again, Jeff Austin. I was not going to mention the roads tonight. We have conversations that are ongoing. But being it was brought up, I am going to defend our city a little bit and remind everybody that we have the Del Rio intersection and we have the Santa Rosa intersection, and those are the only two with stoplights. So those are the two intersections that have the most abuse in this city, because that's where all the big trucks like to get off, because it's very hard to get through stop signs. So I will defend our city a little bit in saying these are very tough intersections to maintain, and Caltrans is not playing nice. Moving on, I have to give our city some kudos here. The street sweeper is doing a remarkable job, and I found out that although Ryan is kind of taking over and making sure it happens, behind the scenes was Laura, who negotiated this contract, and I will ever be grateful. We don't have sandbars down the middle of El Camino Real anymore. Thank you. You have no idea. With that being said, a couple other little interesting things have come to my attention. The Circle K on El Camino is under a full remodel. The contractors are from out of town. They have been renting at Glenn's. I asked how the inspection was going and how the construction's going, and the kudos go to Bruce. They said our inspectors are fabulous, on par, and some of the nicest that we've worked with. So I want to bring that up for that comment. I think it's very important when you hear good things about a city inspector. Winter Wonderland, what an incredible event. My daughter, or Kate's, my daughter anyways, was the first child down. She had a blast. I think it's a great event. I think we have a lot of great events in the city. I, however, would like to caution anybody that is running for an elected office that if you're going to campaign at these events, which you have the right to do, and this is where council can suggest to other groups, it's really tough when people are wearing a name tag and then campaigning for a nonprofit or somebody like the printery that is in trying to give literature out because you may think it's political. So I would hope that certain entities take heart on that and spread it to keep the event cheerful. So I think our council can suggest that, and that's what I would be asking. Other than that, happy holidays, happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, and I don't believe we have another city council till next year, so happy New Year's as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak at community forum? I'm not seeing anyone in chambers. We've got one person online. Is this the student by any chance? All right, I'm not seeing anybody raise their hand. I don't see any phone folks, so we'll go ahead and close public comment, and we will always take kudos for staff, so way to go, Bruce, and thank you for that. All right, moving on. Oops. Hold on here. Let me get my... All right, we are on to our one public hearing of the night, and that is our 2024 Community Development Block Grant Draft Recommendations, and this will be presented by our Public Works Director, Mr. Nick DeBar.
Thank you, Mayor Moreno. Let me remember how to do this. It seems like it's been a while. There we go. Okay. So community development block grants tonight, as every year we have draft recommendations that the city council provides. The community development block grants, otherwise known as CDBG. I won't do my little joke about the public works block grants this year, but anyway, it's kind of funny. Anyways, Atascadero participates along with other local agencies, so the other cities in the county. We used to administer it ourselves, but the county has been doing it for 10 plus years now, and it's nice that they do that because there is a lot of effort. What they've done is they have a public hearing. They've got to comply with a lot of the federal regulations because this is funded by the Department of Housing and Urban Development. They recently put out solicitations for these grants, and tonight we're going to review the applications that were received for Atascadero's fair share of that CDBG. So the CDBG is for community development activities. It must meet at least one of three national objectives that are shown here. Benefit to low and moderate income persons, aid in the prevention or elimination of blight, and then also address urgent needs that pose a serious and immediate threat to the health or welfare of the community. CDBG funding is broken down into three portions or categories. The first is called public facilities and housing projects. There's no cap limit on this category, and these are more for the physical infrastructure type projects. Public services category allows for quite a wide range of public service activities, including, you know, employment services, crime prevention, child care, health services, substance abuse services, fair housing, counseling, recreational services, things of this nature. That does have a cap of 15% of the total amount that's awarded to the city. And then lastly, the administration piece that I mentioned is capped at 20% of the city's award amount. So this year, the estimated allocation is $134,205. If we keep the 15% and 20% for public services and administrative, respectively, public facilities would be estimated at a little over $87,000. Public services would be just over $20,000. And then administrative costs are broken down between the county and the city. The county mandates 13% of that amount to administer it for all the urban centers, and the city gets 7% of that. These amounts will be adjusted by HUD in early 2024, and then the city council will have a final recommendation usually in March of the following year. So in about 3 months, we'll come back to the council once all the other cities have made draft recommendations. The county compiles all those recommendations and then, talks to all the cities and others. And then we final awards are usually adjusted proportionally to the amount that's awarded. So here's a table of the applications that the county received on behalf of the city. You also have those applications. I believe they were distributed yesterday to council in a hard copy, but we're also available electronically. The first category, the public facilities and housing projects, one application was received by the City of Atascadero's Public Works Department for ADA accessibility and barrier removal This one is for Via Camino at an estimated amount of 90,000 requested. There were three public services applications received, one from ECHO for operational expenses at $6,000. Second was received by Five Cities Homeless Coalition. These were for housing, subsistence payments, homeless assistance, and other homeless-orientated services at $4,667. And then lastly, the City of Atascadero Recreation Department for Youth Activities Scholarships at $12,500. And then lastly, the administration, I want, as we mentioned, limited to 20%, and the costs are kind of broken down there, 7% city costs and 13% county cost. And I might add that some of these others, not the city applications, but Five Cities, Homeless Coalition, as well as ECHO, they made other requests to other cities in the county for additional funding, and those amounts are also in their application that you have. I might add that a change was made some time ago by HUD where they do require $8,000 minimum per ward, but that can be, you know, a compiled amount from, you know, whatever cities or the county. It just needs to be $8,000. And usually the city or the county will look at that once all draft recommendations come in, and they typically make sure that if somebody applies that, you know, they do have something, meet that $8,000 minimum requirement. I just wanted to kind of talk about the Via Camino project. I know there's been a lot of this was awarded a couple years ago. There's a partial award to it. And then also the Santa Rosa project that we've been working on. But the Via Camino project is between, this is a segment between El Camino and Paloma Park. It might be a little difficult to see here, but Bordeaux House is on the north side, and the wetland area or the Octagon House is just there on the south. And this project is two different locations on this segment, but down near Paloma Park, there's a missing link, if you will, between the sidewalk. You can see it in the bottom right-hand corner of this slide. Missing link between where the sidewalk ends, right at the creek on Via Camino, and then going into Paloma Park. I do know that the city manager mentioned earlier to me that on his way to work, he noticed a lot of the school children from Bordeaux House and everything. I guess they walked down to Paloma Creek or Park and to the parking lot, and the bus picks them up there. So they're using this path every day, and that's probably why it's very worn down and a good cattle path right there. The other section of this project is on the south side, closer to El Camino, but there's, again, missing sidewalk there. There's a bus stop that's on this section. It's kind of centered right there, just to the left of the center entrance to Bordeaux House. But beyond the other side, and we would be curb gutter sidewalk extended, and we'd prepare a bus stop pad and work with RTA on getting benches and others. We do have, actually, the city used to provide the schedule services that RTA now provides. So we do have a number of bus shelters that at locations on El Camino that we could move over to this location and reuse as well. So we're looking at that. And then we're also looking at a better crosswalk somewhere around Via Camino. If you look down by the liquor store there on El Camino, that's a very long distance. You can see with the right turn lane and that, and there's some really, I guess, for lack of a better term, funky sloping that goes on along there that would be, you know, take some effort to make that, you know, meet ADA requirements. So we are looking at maybe an alternative location for a crosswalk. If we, you know, it might be an enhanced crosswalk as well. So that's, we haven't started the design on this, and we plan to do that here in the next couple months and get a designer on board. And then here's kind of the previous allocations to these two projects. Santa Rosa project is actually that sidewalk next to Motel 6. It goes from El Camino up to the northbound ramp. And there's been a number of allocations. So we actually, the city made an application in 2019 for the first year. And that's a year that there's some reallocation to Echo, and that was allowed them to buy the Motel 6 up in Paso for their new homeless shelter and everything. So that was very well worth it. That year we hadn't designed. We thought we had enough money, and so there was the Vio Camino the next year in 2021. Santa Rosa was under design at that point, but some of the complexities of some of the retaining walls and then cost escalations, really, we underestimated initially in that 2020 application what that would take. So the next 2 years of allocations went to Santa Rosa. And then this year we're requesting Vio Camino. We feel like there's plenty of money. There's some reallocations from pre-2020 grant awards that were unspent that also were reallocated to the Santa Rosa project. So you can see there at the bottom line is total funding there and what we estimate the project cost to be at this point. So right now, Santa Rosa, we have it ready to go. We're just waiting for the county to complete the environmental permitting. There's a NEPA process, a federal environment, very similar to CEQA, but a federal. And that's one of the reasons they earn their 13% of the administration cost. So the recommendation tonight is for council to develop and adopt draft funding recommendations for the 2024 CDBG funds. And I have a spreadsheet ready, as we have in the past, so we can always pull that up whenever you're ready, Mayor. And I'm happy to take any questions you have. And I might add that there are some applicants also in attendance if they want to, if you have any questions on their specific applications.
Thank you, Director. I do have a question about a question about Santa Rosa and Viejo Camino. So I think what you're saying is Santa Rosa is fully, as best we can tell, fully funded. We've been waiting for close to a year for the county to get through that NEPA process. But that should be fully funded and ready to go, and possibly leftover money to finish out Viejo Camino if there's extra needed. Because there was a page in our in the supplemental that seemed to indicate that between 2021 and 2024, this request seemed to indicate that would kind of cover Viejo Camino. So do we have the sense that this will complete those two projects as best we know?
I talked to the project manager, Ryan Hayes, earlier, and we looked at the cost again. And we really feel like Santa Rosa has plenty of funding right now, and then we really feel like there's going to be if that amount that's not spent on Santa Rosa were reallocated to Vio Camino, I would be very, very comfortable that these two projects could get completed with the grant request through 2024.
Okay. I know in the past ALF had come and they were looking for some funding for their new facility, and we went with Santa Rosa because there were some issues with that, finding that new facility, and we needed to finish out Santa Rosa, and so this kind of keeps going, and we haven't seen applications from others. And do we have a sense? I think what I've seen from ALF is that they don't have a spot yet, so it's kind of hard to request CDBG funds when you don't have something because you've got a timely use of funds issue. So I think all of us up here have said publicly we're hoping that whether it's ALF or ECHO or some organization that needs something, we are hoping to see from you. These are very important projects, the accessibility ones for sure, but it would be nice to be able to facilitate some of these other things. Because we have, as you can all see here, not a lot of money to work with every year with the great need that there is. And so we do the best that we can to allocate that. I did want to ask Director Banish, I'm getting used to saying that, with regards to the scholarships, because what was in here, you know, is a maximum of a certain amount. And so with that maximum for the scholarships, it looks like we're serving 50 kids a year for $12,500. And I know that's not it. And I thought maybe you could shed a little light for everyone.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mayor Moreno. So for the year of 22-23, there were 95 individual beneficiaries. And on average, that'd be 114 per person. And those range from like $22.50 up to $320. It just depends. And some of the individuals will submit a couple times depending on the class or youth sports that they're looking to have assistance with. So in theory, 95 individuals apply for different dollar amounts, but they can't exceed the $250 per person or the $500 per family. So in different times of year, you see different amounts. So if quarter one, you see, you know, a lower amount based on the sports that are being offered at that time in the classes. So quarter one, we have 14, quarter two, 11, quarter three, 17, and quarter four, 54. So we have more going on with basketball, soccer, those type of things kind of drive those numbers when that happens. So hopefully that helps answer the questions. But we definitely had 95 overall for the year.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, so that gets us some clarity on the city projects. I know that if we have any questions about ECHO or I'm not sure, I think Michael is here with probably five cities. He had a hand up just a minute ago. So we'll, if that's who you are, Michael, or if you're a member of the public, we will bring you on at some point. Any questions of staff before we go to public? Council member, I'll start with Darris, and then Borbeau, and then we'll just kind of go down the line here.
Just a follow-up on the VAO Camino and the Santa Rosa, because I know Santa Rosa was delayed a little bit, probably I think it was because of COVID, but then as a result of that, the budget or the cost of the project, you know, expanded greatly, and then it delayed it again. So I know you said that you're comfortable that it's going to be fully funded, whatever's left over will go to VAO Camino, and it'll finish it, but if it shouldn't, is that going to be another one of those things that we have to worry about, that it's, you know, going to get delayed and then the cost is going to go up and then we're, you know, just basically chasing our tail on it?
Yeah, that's a great question. And Santa Rosa got delayed just because of the funding a little bit. There's a lot more retaining wall type of work, and then also there's a lot of the pavement that needs to be, you know, once we cut out that curb gutter sidewalk, a lot of the pavement, it's not as bad as Del Rio, but, you know, it may be in a couple of years. So we're a lot of that pavement is going to be repaired as well, especially there's a huge pothole, like when you first turn up. That the guys are always filling and seem to be chasing. But I really feel like we can deliver on these. I really feel like, you know, this is plenty of money for us to get these two projects complete. So barring any kind of weird, you know, cost escalation, that would just be something that none of us would expect. I really feel like we can get this done. And we're hoping to have Santa Rosa under construction next summer and VAO Camino the following year.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Regarding, the excess, the surplus money from the Santa Rosa project, because, you know, if your estimate holds, you have $46,000 extra, which then would go under your proposal to VAO Camino, which would then in turn be more than the estimated cost of Viejo Camino. With the assuming then there's a remaining balance after Viejo Camino, that would be available, I assume, for future projects that have yet to be identified?
That's correct. So that money could not be used towards public services or administrative costs. It would have to be for a public.
But it's not, you don't lose the money because your project costs less than you set aside.
No.
Than the sentence of the multiple years you set aside.
Right. Any unspent grant awards are usually reallocated to the public okay. facilities. So, because there's no cap on that.
And do we have a list, or you have a list of the potential projects around town that are for this? Because I think I expressed this concern a few years ago when we first did Viejo Camino, is that this is a frontage on private property. That if somebody was building something there, they would be conditioned to put in curb, gutter, and sidewalk. And so we're essentially almost, you know, using some form of public funds to provide something that might have at some point in time been provided by the private property owner. I suppose this is an enhancement to the value of the property for somebody to develop it. But I'm concerned how we go about choosing, not concerned, but curious, because, you know, I'm always curious how we go about choosing these individual projects, if you will, and you know, okay, let's pick this one over that one if we have a list of 10 of them to do.
Sure, no, and that's a great question. We all know how we pick the roads for F-14. Mm-hmm. I mean, critical point management. We don't pick it based on critical point management. A little bit different, but it's more from, you know, complaints, kind of some complaint-driven things we notice in the community, just institutional knowledge on some of these things as well. The worst one was actually probably along the Flums property that we got completed a couple of years ago. That was, you know, very obvious, but these are a little less obvious of their priorities. Mm-hmm. We really try to look at, you know, the users of it, and, you know, there's children or disabilities or things like that, or different parts of town. But we do have an ADA transition plan, draft one, and it's one of the things that, you know, I've been talking to the ADA coordinator about, maybe updating and trying to, you know, get a prioritization for some of those improvements. Because I really do feel like, you know, if we have more public involvement, hearing from the public where they'd like to see some of these improvements, I think it would be great. Yeah.
Well, I think there's a clear public benefit to doing this project. I'm curious, though, in the report you mentioned 450 linear feet is ADA compliant sidewalk and curb ramps at two locations, and you pointed out on the map the extension, you know, there at the corner, you know, in the lower right of this slide. Is that just one of the two curb ramps, or is the other one along this other 450-foot stretch? I'm just curious where there were two of them.
Yeah, I think we've been looking at, honestly, if it would make sense to put a mid-block crosswalk. Honestly, I know we don't like mid-block crosswalks. This might be one location that has very clear line of sight, but it would have to be enhanced, so I think we're looking at that, and if we can't get that, then we'd probably be looking up on El Camino to do a couple of curb ramps up there.
Okay, thank you. And then a question for Director Banish regarding the $12,500 on the youth activity scholarships. Last year, I think it was, the city did not submit an application. We had, you know, kind of a substantial turnovers of staff, et cetera. How did it go with not having the CDBG funding available for those youth activity scholarships? What was the impact?
Thank you, Councilmember Bourbeau. We were able to use Tascadero Police Association funds for assisting with getting through that. That was really, it was money well spent. It was there for us to utilize, and we did that. And we'll never miss that deadline again.
No, so. I understand why that happened and everything. But yeah. Thank you to that, and thank you to the Police Association for stepping up and doing that. So, okay, thank you.
Question for Director Banish. Did we have any, were there any funds left over or funds underneath the 20,000, the 12,500 in the unused funds that?
We actually, I believe, went over a little bit. We had 10,752 budgeted, and we came in at 10,896.90, so a little over by 144.90. So we used all of it for this last go-round, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Mayor, may I interject here real quickly? It's on these numbers, because I just want to make a correction.
Sure,
on this,
go ahead.
On this slide, it shows 12,500, but in the staff report, it's 12,000. And these numbers add up to 140,008. So I just wanted clarification as to what the actual number is, because in the staff report it's 12,000 even.
Yeah.
And that number does add up to 139,508.
I wondered about that.
Yeah, the staff report says 12,000, but the application in the supplement says 12,500. Yeah. So, but you're
okay.
Correct.
I just want to make sure that that we're on the same page here with that, because that you know mess up some numbers here.
Thank you. The application is 12,000.
Yeah, I think that was a typo, and I'm sorry that was caught, I believe, by staff, and I forgot to mention that.
All right.
That was a typo in the staff report. 12,000.
Okay. Oh, in the staff report, it's a typo.
Yeah, the staff report had
the typo, because in the supplemental, in the application, it says 12,500.
Okay, but if you add up all these numbers, including and make it 12,500, then the total funds requested is 140,008.
Okay, so let's do that math. But that is what's in the application. Okay. So, but good catch on that. Okay.
And then, do we have? This is probably a question for the applicants. But do we have clarification on the uses of funding as we're doing here from ECHO and from Five Cities with this specificity as to whether, particularly with the grant for Five Cities, which is for services they provide throughout the county, whether those are for the rental assistance and other payments that get people into housing, or whether that's or for services and who provides them. And then the other question for the applicants is just to clarify the process that happens when somebody from Atascadero who is working with ECHO and might or might not be at the shelter needs homeless prevention funds that are done from Five Cities. Who does that for the whole county? That's probably a question for the applicants. I'll put it out there.
Councilmember Newsom, did you have?
I have a handful of questions. Mark asked one of them. Councilmember Derez. On some of the applications, such as ECHO, it listed that there is an attached narrative when it tries to detail the relevance of their projects. I didn't see that in the packet. Do any of these applications attach a cover letter to us? Because this application is a generic for the San Luis County, but I didn't know if there was anything additional that they put on the request for us as a city.
These are generic applications that the county puts out that they must complete. So they might be able to attach other information.
So for the most part, there isn't a narrative of how, and we can ask the applicants. It's just that when we get these applications, in the past years, the applicants don't always appear with their applications, so we're not sure how that money is allocated. I think we have Five Cities attending, but it looks like ECHO is not here this evening. Oh, yes. Okay, great. Thanks. Then I can ask the applicant those questions. Not a problem. In regards to Via Cameo, or the Via project, in the past, when we've done improvements for undeveloped property, we have set aside, I don't want to say a lien, but we have assessed a dollar amount for improvements. Is that something that will happen if we invest money on this property, that if somebody comes in and develops it, who's responsible for curb and gutter, will we assess it to them?
Frontage improvements are triggered on private development when the improvements of the structures exceed 25% or more of its current value. The land values don't apply to that, but anytime that improvements are done that increases the value of that, the improvements on that property over 25%, that triggers frontage improvements. We wouldn't put a lien on this one just because it is a grant application, so it is, you know, something that the city would complete for the public's benefit. So, I would not expect a lien to be put on the property there.
Okay, thank you. And then, the timeline for that. What is the time frame for spending the funds? In the past, for capital improvements, there was a timeline on which those funds needed to be used. So Atascadero Loaves and Fishes didn't meet that criteria. The sidewalk project is showing a completion of 2025 of July. When do we anticipate the expenditure of those funds for the project?
So this is with a federal program, they have a little different fiscal year than we have. So these would be 2024 funding revenue. So we would expect to get that money next September. So we'd have some time once we get that to complete the project. So if we get it completed in 2025, as we're hoping, the Villa Camino project, then we're doing really good with that timeline.
What is the timeline for using funds through the grants?
I don't know offhand what that is, but I know they do want timely use of those. And with the public services and then the administrative costs, the administrative costs are what you expend during that, year. But public services are a little bit different, different time frame. Public facilities, I know that takes a little longer, especially with environmental and other things that sometimes you have to mitigate or outside the agency's control. I don't have that information right offhand, but it's one of those things where we do report back to the county because they are the ones that are reporting on our behalf to the feds. So we're always giving them updates on where we're at with project progress and everything else. And there's a little more flexibility on the public facilities category than the other categories.
Okay. I vaguely remember, I think it was under 2 years, but with FEMA disaster, we had a lot of extensions that exceeded close to 11 months. So I'm assuming with this time frame, if we do get additional flooding, that we'll meet that criteria. Just didn't want to lose the funding if we had a spend-by date.
And the Santa Rosa project is ready to go. We have plans that are ready to bid out. We're just waiting for that final NEPA clearance, and we're ready to go.
Wonderful. Thank you. I'm going to go ahead and open it up to public comment so that individuals who have applications before us can speak, any members of the public can speak. And I do see your hand, Michael. We kind of have a policy of the people who are in chambers speak first, and so I just kind of want to keep with that. And so if there's any members of the public wishing to speak, and then Michael, keep your hand raised because we will get right to you.
Thank you. Austin Zollheim, Director of Operations and Development for El Camino Homeless Organization, or ECHO. Tonight, Council, really before you, I wanted to bring forth the importance of one of ECHO's application. I wanted to let you know, first and foremost, that the number of individuals housed this year through ECHO's program is now at 184. That is individuals and families with children that have been housed to date, and we're not done for this year. We still have plenty of folks that are right on the edge, right on the cusp of looking for that housing, finding that, filling out those applications, taking that responsibility and empowering themselves to get back into housing in our community through workforce, through case management, through working through all of the projects that are available that you, the amazing community of Atascadero and the council here supports, and it's incredible to see. The other application that is, for you today that is very important to ECHO is the Youth Sports Grant, and it's very exciting to see that back on. Not only is that important for our community, but it is important for the families that are served through ECHO. So many of our families that come to us that have that school-age children, those that are really looking for that opportunity to get back into the community and get involved, and that foundation and stability that those grants provide for the youth that are staying with us are truly important to connecting to community and staying connected. Being able to support that and being able to provide different pieces through different grants that we have, where the applications are helped paid for by the city and the uniforms and the balls and the different pieces can be paid for by services that ECHO taps into, is incredibly important for us as well. With those two applications, I just want to point that if there's extra money after allotting those different pieces, that I would ask really looking at the applications that are before you and making sure that all of the funding sources that are coming in are truly funding services here in Atascadero that are local, right? Focusing those services to affecting those in our community who need it most, like the Youth Sports Grant and like ECHO. So I really appreciate your time, your consideration, and I'm here to answer any questions if you do have any. Thank you.
And with that, why don't you go ahead and stay up and let's see. I think Councilmember Newsom might have had a question and Mayor Pro Tem as well. Okay.
Great speech. You addressed it right there. Whether or not the funds were being used in our city. And you pointed out the key and how important that is because we want to keep this funding local and serve those that are suffering the most in our community.
And I would first of all congratulate ECHO on 184 individuals that transitioned into permanent housing so far this year, the calendar year. That's, I always enjoy quoting that number as it gets larger and larger every time. And second, I would ask the question that I asked earlier, I would address to you in particular, how does it work when someone who is either at the ECHO shelter or it's contacted ECHO because they live in the community and they are at risk of losing their housing, then gets assistance where ECHO works with five cities to get either rapid rehousing money or homeless prevention funds to get that individual into or retained in housing?
So first, I want to comment on the number. I also enjoy saying it every time because every time that I have said it this year, I've been wrong, and the number has grown every single day the next day. So I'm hoping that if I talk to you tomorrow, that number will be different. On the second piece of that question, I would say that it is, to Councilmember Newsom's point as well, ECHO is focused on both of our locations in Atascadero and in Paso Robles and being able to offer resources as hubs for both of those locations. So depending on where someone calls for service in North County, that falls under either our Paso Robles campus or our Atascadero campus. So if someone calls for housing assistance or for any services whatsoever, those are addressed first by navigating to the appropriate campus. And if they can't make it to the campus, that includes an outreach case manager who is willing to bring the services directly to that individual as well. When it comes to specifically to the funding that is focused on getting folks that are housing prevention, right? Making sure that homeless prevention funding is available, getting individuals to stay where they are, that is part of a case management process that actually goes through ECHO. So that person is connected with our ECHO case manager, working through filling out the available applications, connecting with that outreach provider. In certain cases, it includes even that outreach case manager doing room inspections, going through and making sure that the deposit and all of the things that are required for the application are completed. Those are all responsibilities of our ECHO case manager, then working to get the funding to be available to pay for that. So Five Cities Homeless Coalition is a wonderful partner of ECHO, and they are the holder of that account money that comes from a separate grant from the county specifically. But when it comes to the case management of that person, who picks up the phone call if someone calls for services in North County, when it comes to homelessness, that is ECHO.
Thank you.
Councilman.
Thank you, and thank you, Austin. Question for you. In your request, you're asking for $6,000 from Atascadero and just under $10,000 from Paso Robles. How do you arrive at those numbers? I'm curious.
It's a great question.
I mean, I don't need you to go in great detail. I'm just meaning there's a difference, and I'm going to have the same question for Five Cities.
Yeah. Part of the reason that we come up with our number is to truly be responsible partners in our community. We understand that there is only a small amount of money that is able to be given, and we want to make sure that that money, we don't want to come in and say, can you give ECHO $20,000 of the allotted money? We want to make sure that other programs like the Youth Sports Grant and other applications like ALF, for example, other community partners that we know our community relies on, because ECHO knows that we cannot solve this problem by ourselves. We know that this is a community effort and that it is the responsibility of all of our community partners to really come and show up. So when we apply for that funding, we try to be as responsible and respectful as possible to all of our community partners, making sure that we only apply for an Atascadero what we truly need, and the same for Paso Robles, making sure that the CBD dollars for each location go directly to that location as well. Echo Atascadero currently has 60 beds, where our Echo Paso has 70 beds running different programs. So some of the different money comes from different staffing allotments as well.
Thank you.
All right. I'm not seeing any other questions. Thank you, Austin.
Thank you.
And so now let's bring on Michael Azevedo.
Good evening. Thank you for giving me the time. I appreciate you considering our request. So I'm Michael Azevedo. I am our housing program manager. So I oversee all of our case management staff and kind of make the programs work with the funding we are allotted. We do provide housing services countywide, even though Five Cities Homeless Coalition is our name. We receive about an average of 300 calls a month for residents all over the county seeking assistance. There have been some kind of relevant questions about how CDBG requests are applied for in different places around the county. We do that in proportion to the assistance that we provide in each city. And we've been seeing increased requests for our services from North County residents, specifically in the last calendar year. So starting in January 2023, for rapid rehousing funding. So someone who's currently HUD homeless that would be moving into housing. We have served 27 households in the city of Atascadero. And then for homeless prevention funding, so short-term rental arrears or short-term rental assistance, we have provided homeless prevention funding to 13 households in the city of Atascadero. For the rapid rehousing dollar amounts, that would be $57,608. And then for the homeless prevention dollar amount, that would be $35,560. We work closely with our partners like Echo and The Link to identify those households that are at risk of losing their housing. And then we do receive referrals from Echo when they've gotten that phone call for the homeless prevention. And they get screened for eligibility by Echo and then sent our way, as Austin mentioned, for actually holding those funds. So any money that we would be awarded by Atascadero for CDBG would go directly to Atascadero residents. Thank you again for the time, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have for me.
Thank you. I will look to my council members to see if there are any questions.
Oh, he answered my question. So.
Okay. Yeah, it seemed like he did. Oh, yeah. All right. Yeah. Thank you very much, Michael. We appreciate that. Okay, I'm going to look to any other members of the public. I'm not seeing any here or online, and I'm not seeing any on the phone. Is that correct, Luke? All right, so I'll go ahead and close public comment and bring that back. Nick, let's go ahead and put up our spreadsheet. As we say every year, a lot of need and not enough dollars. A lot of need chasing too few dollars.
Mary, I did have a follow-up question before we plug in numbers. I wanted to understand
go right ahead.
The rules of the road here. Maybe I'll wait till he gets the slide up, though, because it's germane to that. Or it's based on the original request slides. I think either you or Director Banish or maybe Mr. Solheim from Echo alluded to it, but I want to make sure I understand. So we have these three requests in the public services category. They total a number, and the amount available is obviously less than that. But you know, if we fully funded the city of Atascadero request, for the youth scholarships, and fully funded the Echo request, there would still be a small amount left over in the neighborhood of $1,500 or something like that. That could go towards five cities, since they would be getting money from other cities to meet their $8,000 minimum. But can we actually give more than what was requested? I mean, that seems a little odd, but that's my question, is can we give more than what was requested to Echo or the youth scholarships?
Yeah, the council can give more or less or nothing to any of these, so it's really up to your discretion how you want to spend the CDBG.
Okay, but I mean, the administrators at the county level or higher up at the federals aren't going to go, wait, these people only asked for X and you gave them Y.
Right. No, and I in the applications, it also, like, lists, like, you know, where the other applicants ask money from, you know, the other cities and the counties. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what's specific to these funds that the city is responsible to awarding? It's completely up to you how you want to do that.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Actually, I wanted to see where you're going on this, but because I feel a little awkward about giving an applicant more money than they than is in their grant request. So my initial take was obviously to give the $87,000 available for Viejo Camino, and of course the administrative costs. My inclination was, you know, to give the amounts requested to Echo and the city, and leave the balance for five cities. I know we do have some concern here about providing some funding to five cities, given that they are supporting people in our city, but they are, you know, from out of town, so to speak. And so I have, you know, some reluctance to do that, to give money to five cities, but I wanted a clarity on that question. So I don't know. I guess I would, I mean, I hate to give more than was asked, but I guess I would give, you know, the additional available funds to Echo for the purposes that they've indicated here. So that would be the, you know, to give the 12.5 to for the youth activity scholarships, and to give the balance to Echo.
Councilmember Darris.
I'm still a little confused on if it's 12,000 or 12,500. I don't know if that matters because I can just keep it.
Yeah, it is 12,500.
Is it? Okay. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I was going to go with the, okay, the 12,5. Well, starting at the top, though, the public facilities, the 87, the full amount for that. And then the youth scholarships, the 12,5. And then, yeah, nothing really to five cities, and let the balance go to Echo. So I guess that comes to 81 something, whatever the balance comes to, or 71 something. Because now I'm confused on the balance.
76.31. Just take the balance you originally had, subtract 500, and you got it.
Mm-hmm. The math here, and I'm still screwing it up. So you guys understand what I'm saying.
All right.
And then, of course, the rest.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem.
Sure. I would start out with fully funding the Via Cabrera project, like you know, my colleagues, and the youth scholarships for Atascadero. It would be my instinct to go ahead and do to give this Echo its request and give the balance of those two to five cities, but it is just because there is value to us in being part of the regional work that makes sure that these opportunities are available for our folks in Atascadero who need this assistance. Let me set it up this way initially and then reserve the opportunity to come back, because I'm not sure that there's going to be realistically a large enough amount to be worthwhile to have the fuss of managing it for a grant for efficiency's sake. So, but my initial recommendation would be 6,000 for Echo, 1,631 for five cities, and 12,500 for youth activity scholarships.
Councilmember Newsom.
Thanks. I'm going to use a word that I heard a lot at the high school of the complexities of this challenge of youth general plan and land use, and our job is very complex in the fact that we serve so many people with a limited amount of resources. I know that five cities submit some application, and looking at the numbers, they're getting 41,000 for other cities. And we are a small city that provides a lot. And I think that the bulk of 7,631 needs to go to Echo and the rest to our youth scholarship. I think that's making the biggest impact. I'm not saying that Five Cities Coalition doesn't do an amazing job in our community, and they are stepping up and doing rent subsidies. The challenges is that we can serve more people with this allocation.
And so I would, you know, you've all heard from me the last couple of years, and my inclination too is to keep it in a Tascadero, but to, you know, to the point that was made about a regional, you know, regional support, ECHO does not just house people in a Tascadero. Mm-hmm. So ECHO is regional. And that's the point I have tried to make over the years, is that each of these organizations doing incredible work that is very much needed and assisting people from throughout the county. So it's not that those 60 beds in ECHO are just for Atascadero residents or just North mm-hmm. County residents. So there is that regional aspect to it. And because there are so few dollars chasing so much need, I would like to concentrate it here in ECHO, where the work is being done, even though, again, it is benefiting a regional need. So with that, I would like to put the $12,005 to the City of Atascadero Youth Scholarships, the $7,631 to ECHO, and then, of course, the $87,233 to the City of Atascadero for the Viejo Camino and ADA improvements.
And Madam Mayor?
Yes.
Given the direction of my colleagues, I would like to remove, to take the 1631 and put that into ECHO. Okay. It just doesn't make any sense to have these really small numbers and the grant administration that's involved with them. So okay. We'll get the best bang for the buck concentrating it with ECHO.
Okay.
And with all due with great respect to at Five Cities Homeless Coalition that we know are putting a lot of money
100%,
into folks in this area as well.
Yeah, 100%. So thank you, Michael. We do thank you for being here, and we thank you for the work that you and Five Cities are doing. It is so necessary. And please do not take this vote as a lack of appreciation or enthusiasm for what you do. It is very much needed. Again, we're trying to take few dollars and have them be as impactful as we can. So thank you for being here. Thank you for what you do. And with that, I will ask for a motion.
I move we adopt the draft CDBG grants for the 2024 cycle in the amounts indicated on the spreadsheet that we reached consensus on.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Bourbeau, a second by Councilmember Newsom. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Bourbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Daris?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. All right, we are on to we have no management reports, so we are on to council announcements and committee reports. This is where, on our own initiative, council members might give a very brief announcement or brief report on their activities and following any standing committees or things that were on in the city or throughout the county and give a brief update. So with that, I will start on my right with Councilmember Newsom.
Nothing to report, but Merry Christmas.
Thank you. So the Homeless Services Oversight Council Executive Committee meets tomorrow. This is a week earlier than its usual third Wednesday because of the proximity of the holidays. And I would also report that I had the privilege, along with Mayor Moreno, of being present at a menorah lighting at the Paso Robles Park. And I wish a happy Hanukkah to those who are celebrating right now, and Merry Christmas to those who will be celebrating with me soon.
I'm pleased to report that things are going so swimmingly at the IDMA. We have canceled the December meeting, so there will be no meeting.
Woohoo! Getting on track, yeah.
That's right.
Many
competent but boring, that's our motto.
Let's see, so CAPSLO's meeting a week early, so we're meeting Thursday, so that'll be good to get that out of the way and then get in on to Christmas. And then last week, and I don't remember what day it was, the mayor and I and a few others met with a group in Paso Robles. The Almond Country Quilt Guild did a fundraiser making quilts and was able to raise $6,200. And they divided that evenly between ALF and ECHO for Paso Robles and Atascadero. So that was just an amazing effort by that group, what they're able to do and the amount of money that they're able to raise for making their quilts, which some of them take a few hours. Some of them take a year. So it was really quite impressive, and it was a very generous thing for them to do for these organizations that do so much in our community. So thank them very much and all their effort. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. We had a slow cog last week, just a few little things to tell you about. The Kerberl Park and Ride that is supposed to be, you know, they call it a beautification project, but what will be added there once this gets done is also two fast chargers. So we're really, you know, anxious for this work to take place. And unfortunately, I had reported, they got a bid that was too high, only one bid, and so that went away. They had to take a good amount of that Clean California money, give that to something else, and there's still about $100,000 sitting in there for a $500,000 project. And in speaking with Caltrans, they feel confident this is a good project. It is something that should go through, but it could take a little while waiting for other Clean California money to come back from other cities and COGS that haven't used it, and potentially APCD money that would come through, or I'm sorry, CARB money that could come through APCD or slow COGS. So it's still on the horizon as happening, but just the funding isn't there at the moment. And then our downtown infrastructure enhancement, we're still waiting to hear on the $2 million application through the federal appropriation process, you know, what used to be called earmarks, but they're calling that something different now. I think that amount's probably, what we're hearing, been whittled down to about $1 million rather than $2 million. And, you know, the sense we're getting is that we have a good chance of getting it, but, you know, we won't know until, I think it's right around towards the end of January. But in the meantime, we're going to have to be applying for the community betterments grants, and Slow Cog is saying, yep, go ahead and apply for that second round of community betterments. Let's get that money. So I think we're looking good, and being that we are shovel-ready, and that's something that with these community betterment grants, Slow Cog is really focusing on. We want shovel-ready projects that are ready to go, and this one certainly is. So that is good news. And I'll leave it at that. I was, as Mayor Pro Tem Funk said, pleased to be at the Hanukkah celebration. I, along with Mayor Hammond, was asked to speak and share a few words, and it was very humbling to do so. And so, yes, happy Hanukkah to all those who are celebrating now, and wishing everybody Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, the happiest of New Year's, and we look forward to seeing you in 2024. I will ask if there's any individual determinations. But I'm getting the sense that since everyone was giving their holiday greetings, probably not. I'm not seeing anyone. So see you all in 2024. Meeting adjourned. Bye.
It's been a good year.
Very good year.